You're listening to CIBL 101.7 FM, broadcasting to the Fraser Valley from the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus on the traditional and unceded territory of the Stolo people. With me today, through a Zoom interview, I got the Speaker of the Legislative Assembly, the Honorable Daryl Pleckus. I would like to welcome him to this interview. Welcome, Mr. Pleckus.
Thanks very much, Sergi.
And I hope, before we start, I hope everything's going well for you through COVID.
Everything is fine. Couldn't be better.
Great. My very first question is about COVID, actually, sir. How do you think the government of BC's overall COVID response is going?
Well, I think, I'm thinking this would be the view of most people in British Columbia and across Canada. You know, I think governments everywhere, whether we're talking at the municipal level, provincial levels, or federal level, I think most everyone would agree that the governments have done a great job of responding quickly and broadly and, you know, moving heaven and earth to make sure that as many people in every part of society is helped. I think British Columbia has done a pretty spectacular job. Mm-hmm. I think, of course, as everyone knows, helped by Henry and her guidance on, you know, how we can do things in a safe manner. So I think overall, as much as a bad news story COVID is, mm-hmm. I think our response illustrates how governments can make things happen pretty quickly and pretty effectively when they need to.
Mm-hmm. Another question on that front, if I can. With the cases rising now, because yesterday we had about 429 new cases, do you think it's time now that BC look at another lockdown, or do you think that reopening is the way to go?
Well, I think, the best thing we can do is take our lead again from the medical experts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be whatever they recommend in terms of, you know, how we should move forward if a lockdown is necessary. I would be taking my cue from them.
Mm-hmm. With school starting, you know, for most of British Columbians, the children, do you think that the plan that BC's government has set out is keeping into mind the safety of British Columbian students as well as keeping in mind the safety of teachers?
Yes, I do. I think being guided by, you know, the health experts on safety. So I would be confident that they have thought this through exhaustively to make sure that it's safe to go ahead. I'm reminded that, you know, back towards the end of the last school year and, you know, the work of the provincial government, I think it's fair to say we're a world leader in mm-hmm. terms of how they made it happen so that kids could be back in school safely. And it was an opportunity to do a dry run and check and recheck their approach. So whilst all of us should always be mindful that something can go sideways in a minute, I think there will be a quick reaction to that if there is. But right now, if the health authorities are saying it's okay to have kids go back to school, which is, I think, is something all of us want. We don't want to see kids out of school.
No, absolutely not.
So I think the, you know, governments here and elsewhere have to be applauded for making the effort to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of these things where, you know, you could sit back and say, well, you know, we'll do nothing and we'll shut down the schools and you know, see how that goes. But, you know, that's certainly not addressing the primary issue, and that is, you know, kids need to be in school.
Oh, absolutely.
So the fact that the government has, you know, worked very hard to make it happen, I think is a good thing. And again, I would say, just from the little bit I know as an outsider to what the Ministry of Education is doing and the Minister of Education, I think they've done a pretty spectacular job of at least helping us get a readiness. Now, I know not everyone would share that view, because you know, everybody's got one concern or another, but I also appreciate that they've done it in a way which is giving full consideration to individual school districts and concerns of individual parents. Like, at the end of the day, not everyone is going to get exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, pretty good response, I think.
Yeah. And my last question on COVID is, you being an MLA for the Fraser Health Region, and you know that the Fraser Health Region has had some of the highest cases in the province, what would your message be to the people of this region, being their elected MLA, about how to keep themselves safe?
Well, I think the first thing people need to understand, when people talk about, you know, the Fraser Health Authority having a relatively high number of cases to other health authorities, like, well, we are the biggest, you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, the numbers are going to be higher here. But I think people need to, again, follow the guidance that's been laid down by Bonnie Henry,
mm-hmm.
and the health ministry. And that is, you know, paying attention to some basic rules for starters or guides. And that is, you know, maintaining good social distance and wearing a mask at every opportunity. And again, remembering that the idea of wearing a mask is not so much about protecting yourself as much as it is protecting other people.
Mm-hmm.
So for all of us, recognizing that we need to have a great sense of social responsibility, you know, wearing the mask as much as we possibly can. Now, I know we all forget and
yes,
and you know, don't do it as often as we should, but I think having those guidelines in mind is, for the present, up and until we get a vaccine, is good advice.
Absolutely. And how has the COVID crisis actually changed your day-to-day job in Victoria? Because I, you know, seeing your some of your debates in Victoria and the legislature and question period, you guys do a lot more online, don't you?
Yes. And I'm happy to say, and this is really thanks to the people behind the scenes at the legislature, you know, everyone from the clerk's office to people in Hanser to people in the IT department. It's all of those people who came together to facilitate our ability as a legislature to continue sitting, you know, through COVID and through what we call a hybrid system, where, you know, some of us were always in the House, and of course the Speaker had to be in the House.
Absolutely.
But we had a significant number of people who were participating online through Zoom, as we're doing now.
Yeah.
And once again, we did many dry runs, if you will, test exercises to ensure that we could make this happen without a glitch.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, for the most part, it went without a glitch. I mean, there was a few things, minor things, technical difficulties, but at the end of the day, we made it work, and I'm extremely happy about that, because one of the things we wanted to do right at the outset is to enable members to participate in the sitting of the House. We wanted full participation. And once again, I think it's fair to say that we were one of the first legislatures on the planet to do that. And of course, others have done it with success now. And we've been able to show that, you know, if in a case of an emergency of whatever kind, we are going to be able to continue, have the legislature sit.
Great to hear.
Throughout.
Like, you know, like you're just saying, I think Zoom is changing the way things are being done now. You know, technology is playing a big part.
Yes.
As you know, my sister lives in the States. We haven't seen her because the border has been closed for a long time, for about 6 months. So we do a lot of communications through online Zoom and Skype. And so we're becoming pretty used to the technology here at home.
Yes, and I think, of course, you know, all of those people who are participating, and including people outside the medical profession, you know, who have jobs to do which are require them to be, shall we say, more at potential risk than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always a difficult situation. I think, in terms of going back to your, you know, you're alluding to Zoom has made it different. In terms of sitting of the legislature, and Simon might have articulated this to you, Simon Gibson, in his role as Assistant Deputy Speaker, but it isn't, there are some downsides to it. And one is a legislature is expected to be a place where you have debate on one issue or another.
Mm-hmm.
And that debate, you know, can't continue to the same degree if you're on Zoom.
Yeah,
because you don't capture the essence of, you know, people collectively expressing dissatisfaction with something. So there's a bit of a, I would say, a bit of a disadvantage to opposition parties. But having said that, you know, I mean, it's still workable, and I guess that it leaves it to each party to try and come up with ways to compensate for. You know, the fact that somebody's speaking and there's no one else outside the legislature who's, you know, people can only hear that one person.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than the collective voice. So that's a bit different. The other thing is, I think, and this, of course, is going to improve over time. You know, everybody expects people on Zoom to look like they would as if they were on TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, when we first started, it was, you know, it was obvious that some people were coming to grips with that. But I think over time that will improve too, and it's going to work out quite well. It's certainly helpful to think of Zoom in cases where people need to meet in very much of a hurry, and there's no capacity to travel fast enough. Zoom could take care of that. Like at the legislature, we are doing Zoom meetings as a matter of course. We have committee meetings by Zoom. We have our estimates by Zoom. So Zoom, I think, is going to be, and it's you know, other modes of the same kind of thing are going to be, I think, commonplace. I think people will be doing this regularly. I have, in the next couple of days, several Zoom meetings. So it works. And I think it'll eventually get to the point where Zoom will be so accessible that, you know, people can meet Zoom, elected officials can meet with non-elected officials via Zoom and constituents.
Absolutely. I think one thing that's going to come up, personally, I think one thing that's coming out of this COVID crisis is the way that we interact with other people, you know.
Right. Although, as you know, Surjeet, nothing is better than meeting somebody in person.
Now I want to get out of the COVID thing and ask you a couple more questions about your investigations. Because last time you were on my air,
yeah,
you were talking about ongoing investigations that you and Alan had were working on with the police in Victoria. So
yes.
I wanted to see if you wanted to share some news with my listeners?
Well, you know, I guess, you know, as has been the case since the police investigation first started, it's really difficult to talk about, you know, parts of that, you know, other than in a general way. But I think the police are, I can say this, they're, you know, very, very far along in their investigation. And I was always confident that if we had an election next October, that the police would be finished. And of course, what happens is, if there is in the through the work of the police a belief that there's you know, there's a confirmation that in their minds that there's been a crime committed, then they make a recommendation to the prosecution. They recommend charges. And then it's up to the prosecutor to decide whether or not to approve those and whether or not it's in the public interest to approve those. And away we go. So the police, of course, aren't going to be, you know, telling me everything that they're doing.
And,
nor should they. Likewise with any aspect of the prosecution. But I still am confident as I ever was that at the end of the day, you know, this will lead to charges. And that's just based on my experiences, the criminologist, what we call, is there a prima facie case to believe that somebody has committed a crime? So I'm still confident about that, but you know, at the same time, I'm also very mindful of the way our justice works, and you know, that these things just take a long time, and it's very frustrating when one thinks that, you know, you've got a concern about something, and you know, it's not like it was in the old days where, you know, somebody's going to be looking at that, or in most other countries they look at it and it happens very quickly. In Canada, you know, things just, they just take forever. And it's a bit disheartening, but I'm still confident that the, you know, the process will take its course, and you know, we'll find out. I'm assuming, I'd be reasonably confident that before the spring is out, we'll have a pretty good idea.
So if I can ask for a commitment, I want to know if we could be the first people that you come to let our listeners know, that would be great.
Yes, but of course what happened, Sergi, is when police move charges to the prosecution.
Then you get,
and then the prosecutor will decide when they're going to do an announcement, if there's going to be one. In this case, I'm assuming there's going to be an announcement one way or the other. But they will not, I won't have very much of a heads up.
Absolutely. On thank you for doing this, and we look forward to having you on regularly.
Thanks very much, Sergi. You take care.
Stay safe and stay healthy.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.